What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 136 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this Monday evening. And as you probably know, if you're listening to this podcast, I would assume that you probably are aware that the Atlanta Braves season is now over in 2018. A lot to talk about, big picture, small picture. And joining me as always, or as often, or as regularly, the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? A sad end to what was really a pretty fantastic year, really, from opening day.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about that just for a second now before we can come back to it later. And I got into a good discussion with actually Zach Harper, who's a basketball writer, is a friend of mine, who's also a Braves fan. And kind of just looking at it from the outsider's perspective, he is a Braves fan, but not a baseball writer slash analyst. He's just more of a fan. And, you know, from the outside looking in, it seemed to him as if, most of the analysis in the series from people that are, you know, on the team, like us, was more negative. And that's probably the case, because it's a series in which you lost three out of four games. It didn't go very well. And wanted to sort of stirred my mind into making sure that we acknowledge frequently and often. I think we've done it this year, but just to kind of say over and over again that this was an unmitigated success this year. You know, the playoff series is kind of almost separately to me. You know, in-game stuff can be frustrating, all that fun stuff. But at the end of the day, even making the playoffs, getting a game was helpful, but just making it to winning 90 games was, all of this was a huge win. And that's something we probably need to keep saying over and over again, even after this loss, is that it was an awesome season.
Absolutely. I mean, regardless, even if they would have got shut out again yesterday and lost 3-0 and didn't score a run, it would have been demoralizing from a fan perspective. Yeah, it sucks, but absolutely, you nailed it. This was a resounding success of a year. I mean, to lose 90 games, 3 years in a row, to then win 90 games this year, it's just really hard to do in baseball. You always hear about the bridge years, and the Braves, in essence, turned their bridge year into a year they won 90 games and won the division and gave the Dodgers a real run. I mean, it's there's a reason that really from the start of the year, the Dodgers have been the odds-on favorite to win the West, or to win the National League and win the West, and we saw just how good they were over the last week. A bummer for sure, but as you said, a huge success for the year, and hopefully they're able to build on what they were able to do this year and go towards 2019 and beyond.
Absolutely. And, you know, for listeners of the podcast, if you're a new listener, welcome. First of all, we hope you guys stick around through the offseason. But for a long time listeners, you would know that we will definitely spend a lot of time in the offseason talking about, you know, the future, talking about moves and positions and contracts and all that fun stuff, trades. We're not going to do that tonight just because, you know, this is a podcast we can kind of reflect on the game and the series and the season. And we'll look forward to be sure in the future. So not going to do a ton of that. We'll acknowledge a couple things, I'm sure, in passing, just sort of circumstances that kind of dictate that. But for all the questions that we're getting, I really appreciate it, and keep them coming about, you know, stuff for 2019, like third base and right field and starting pitching, all that stuff. I promise we're gonna talk plenty about that between now and, you know, February, March, but not tonight. So we'll spend some time on the game and the series. So I guess we'll do what we've been doing in this series and talk about some of the decisions, some of the stuff that actually happened in this game. We won't spend too much time on it because, again, it does feel a little bit less consequential now than it would have if this was a win. But, a couple of decisions that were made lineup-wise. They went to Albies at the number two spot. Camargo stayed at five. They played Tyler Flowers against a left-handed pitcher. None of that stuff I had an issue with. Some people were bothered by it. And in retrospect, Johan Camargo hitting fifth does not look great because he was really bad in the series. I actually feel really bad for him just because he was very good this season. He basically outshined any rational expectation of what he was going to do this year, and then kind of just had a really bad time to have the worst week of the season. Honestly, he was really bad.
Yeah, he ended up not having a hit in the three games, which is crazy since he was kind of the hero of that weekend against Philly when they clinched. It seemed like every time there was a big situation, Johan came up and came through. And, you know, playoffs are a different beast. I'm sure you start out the way he did. I think he struck out three times that first night, and then you start to press and do things that you don't want to be doing. But just looking up and down the lineup, Acuna, even with the heroics in game three, he hit 188. Albies, who you mentioned, moved up to second, hit 200. Freddie hit 250. He had the big homer yesterday. But Nick Markakis hitting 083, when you have and Camargo not getting a hit, when you get one hit combined out of your fourth and fifth hitters, It's going to be a rough series, and it wasn't like the back end of the lineup was great either. So frustrating altogether. It's there's just not much you can do when the middle of your order isn't producing.
Yeah, I mentioned this last night with Joe, but and it actually still held true as I'm looking at this now. Only two members of the Braves offense in the series had OPSs of more than 600, which is that's at 600 is terrible. So, you know, Albies 400, Markakis about 350 or so, Camargo less than a 100 OPS. He walked once, that was it. Tyler Flowers had a 393 OPS, and Ciarte 462, Culberson 398. So like, yeah, I mean, Kurt Suzuki 500 exactly. Like, not that everyone was just abjectly terrible, but no one was good. I mean, even the guys who ended up having the best numbers, Freddie and Acuna, they were your two best players and your two biggest threats, and they had the two biggest moments of the series. But by their standards, their numbers were not good even for them. So there was not a single person in this series on the offensive side that sort of even approached their normal baseline, and that you just can't have that happen.
I mean, it felt like, especially with the team with the Dodgers, were. As we all know how good their depth is, you felt like the Braves really needed an Ender and Ciarte, a Johan Camargo, a Flowers, somebody who wasn't expecting, who wasn't going great for Ozzie to rediscover it. You felt like they needed someone to just go nuts and go 6-for-12 over the series and hit a couple homers and drive in five runs, and they just didn't get it. I mean, you think about, they didn't score in games 1 and 2. And outside of Walker Buehler kind of imploding in the second inning, where he walked Newcomb, should have walked Acuna, and then gave up the grand slam. Outside of that, they scored a total of 2 runs, right? 3 runs, because you had Freddie's homer. I mean, runs.
Freddie's homer, and that was it. Yeah.
Effectively in the games that you didn't win, and that's just not going to get done. So
no, I mean, I feel kind of bad, and I said this before, but. You know, every time I tweeted about a specific person in the lineup, I would get a bunch of tweets talking about, what about this guy? And I'm like, I'm not saying that this person was the only bad person in the lineup. I mean, Camargo was the one standout example because he was just so bad and just looked so bad throughout the series. But Markakis was brutal. It's not like, I mean, it was equal opportunity. Like, I defended Tyler Flowers for playing in the series because he's been really good against lefties all season long. He was bad. And Ciarte had a couple of reasonable moments, but he was bad. Culberson, same thing. Like, there was no one that was good in this series. I mean, you felt good about Acuna and Freeman, but even those guys weren't, like, you know, spectacular outside of those big moments. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the better team won, and we kind of know that. I think everyone knows that at this point in time. And we said it before the series started. Most people did. But I think we were pretty clear before the series started, you and I, when we were talking about this, that it was going to be an upset if the Braves won the series. And after watching 4 games of those two teams, honestly, the most likely result, if you look at all the numbers, is a sweep. Not anything else but that. If you look at all the numbers in this series, the Dodgers probably should have swept the Braves, honestly.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We were some people were talking after the game today about the layoff for the Braves, and did that kind of nuke their momentum a little bit? And I think it did play a factor.
Maybe,
I think the Dodgers were a team that really had to play. I mean, they had to play 163, right? I mean, they were playing right up to the very end. I don't know. In hindsight, sure, maybe you give guys rest. But again, everyone kind of saw that after they clinched that final week, not that the games really meant too much other than home field, didn't really mean too much. And you saw the bats just kind of go to sleep. Part of that might have been facing DeGrom and Syndergaard and Nola. But at the same time, the Dodgers just looked like a team that were firing on all cylinders. And there were times, I mean, obviously in games 1 and 2, especially where the Braves were a little asleep at the wheel, who knows if the week of nothing really mattering had an impact or not, or if it would have been similar regardless. But all the same, you wish they would have been able to use that week of rest a little bit more to their advantage.
Yeah, that's one of those things that you could argue and not have an answer for, and I think that's what we'll probably say here. The Braves did kind of try in those games. Like, they didn't really punt in the way that I almost would have gone further into the punt that they did. Like, they still played guys most days. You know, there was the full-on give-up lineup the day after they clinched, but after that, most guys were playing every day. It wasn't like they shut guys down and it was like pure rust. But you're right. They didn't play well that last week, and that may have not been a great sign. I don't want to take too much from that, but it's one of those things that you could definitely argue for or against looking forward. But obviously, even without that, this is a situation where the Dodgers were just better, and we'll keep saying that.
That's a really good team. I mean, and they're built to win this year. I mean, they were within a game of a World Series title. They have a $200 million payroll. They get guys like Chris Taylor and Max Muncy and just who were nobodies 2 years ago. And you look at the years they've had recently, they're as well run of a franchise as there is right now in the league. And I would imagine that as our resident Vegas expert, I would imagine even against a good Brewers team, they're pretty heavily favored against Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's not come out yet, but I'm assuming they're going to be favored just because. Although the Brewers do have home field, which might swing it a little bit. I'm not sure how much that really factors in, but I think the Dodgers are the favorites, at least in my brain, as the best team. We talked about this a little bit yesterday as well, but just all of their depth was kind of insane. And I tweeted this tonight. This is a team that lost arguably its best position player on like April 30th for the season in Corey Seager. Granted, they went out and traded for Manny Machado, which I understand, but still, like, this is a team that got, I think, 26 games from Corey Seager this year and still did what they did. Anyway,
we'll talk about the Dodgers forever. But yeah, as you said, they deserve to win. They're good.
They were very good in the series. Anyway, I guess we'll just kind of blow through what transpired on this evening, or I guess early afternoon or whatever it was. I know it was afternoon for you, evening sort of here. But, first inning stuff. Fulte was not great, we should say. I do think he battled, which is, a credit to him. It didn't end up looking bad because he only allowed one run in four innings, and that's kind of all you could really ask for him in this spot. I will say that he did not look good to me. He had four walks, which is not great. And, from the first inning, he did allow the only run that he allowed in that first inning after the double by Machado, who obviously killed the Braves all night long. But, I mean, what'd you make of that decision before? I never asked you on the record, I guess, about what you thought about Fulte starting this game. I was in favor of it. You told me he was only going to allow one run in four innings, I would have gladly taken that. I think he was probably worse than that in the big picture. But at the end of the day, he did get through four with only one run, and that's actually a pretty big win, I think.
I'm with you. He was the guy to start, even though it was on short rest. He only threw 50 pitches in game one, so he was relatively fresh. But yeah, I mean, as you said, four innings, one run, you take it. The first inning and even the second inning, he had to kind of toe the line and get out of some trouble, but he did settle in. And credit to Snit for pinch hitting for Fulte, which I'm sure we'll chat on in a minute. And that was the right decision. You wish that you could have gotten a little bit longer out of Fulte, just the way he had settled in. He was looking like his normal self, but at the same time, it was the right move to make, and you had to do it in order to try to score a couple runs there in the third or fourth inning. Hats off to Fulte. He had a rough game one, and he did kind of battle back, and obviously this year was such a big step forward for him and a guy that the Braves are going to count on for years to come. Pitched well, and I think reasonably did just about everything you could have hoped for on short rest.
Yeah, I saw some stuff about, I'm not sure if they were trolling or not, some people trying to say that they should have started Tehran in this game. It's like, guys, relax. Especially after the fact, I don't think you would have gotten four innings of one run ball from Tehran or anything better than that. Let's just say that, based on what we saw from him. And that's kind of just, I understand he was, he obviously, it's a situation where he pitched fine in this game, but he came in sort of in mop-up duty, which is interesting in itself. We'll talk about that in a second. But Fulte was just fine for what you asked him to do in this game, even if he didn't look at his best. Early, I'm not going to go, blow by blow, because obviously it just feels inconsequential right now. But, the one thing I wanted to mention from the first few innings, other than that run that crossed the plate in the first inning, was that there are a couple of really, I wouldn't say really bad, but some questionable defense from Ronald Acuna. Those were probably the things that I circled the most. A couple of misplays. He had one that he misplayed in the first inning that kind of, I'm not sure it led to a run, but it certainly was a factor in the run. And then again in the second inning, on a Puig single, Acuna did not play that well either. So it was a situation where I don't want to kill Ronald Acuna because he's very good at baseball, but there were some bright lights moments for him in the outfield, and that's a situation where I think people have been arguing that he should be playing center long term. I'm with that. I think he's probably center fielder long term, but he didn't look great in left field, and it's a good reminder that he wasn't necessarily like a fantastic defender in left field this year. You might think that a guy with center field tools would be awesome in left field, and I'm not sure that was the case this year. That was kind of probably a good, I want to take it too seriously, but sort of a reminder that he wasn't like completely lights out on defense this year.
he was a little rough, but again, a guy who's played center field basically his entire career.
Right.
he took a little bit of an awkward route on the line drive from Puig, but in the moment, I mean, sure, it's easy to say on replay, oh, well, he kind of hesitated for a second, but obviously in the moment when you have 40,000 people there and you're trying to read the ball and it's sun's going down and everything, yeah, he could have handled it. I don't know. I think they must have had some kind of an extreme shift on for Machado in the first inning.
Yeah, I tweeted about this a little bit.
Over.
Yeah, I think it was Lee Trzezinski, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, tweeted back at me about how it was sort of a standard alignment, and that, and this is something that I find to be true. Normally, for a guy like Machado, you're playing your infield kind of shifting to for him to pull, and your outfield to kind of go against the grain a little bit, because normally, if he's going to hit the ball in the air to left field, it's either going to be a pretty lazy play or it's going to be a home run. So it wasn't like a super extreme shift, but I did think that normally you wouldn't have him quite as far in right field. That was just anecdotal. I'm not going to claim to be a positional expert, but it did feel to me like he was playing a long way from the line. And that maybe that's just the camera angle or whatever it was, but it did feel like he had a long way to go there, which is kind of strange.
Absolutely. And with two outs, even if, unless he was extremely shifted towards the left field line, I think the runner probably scores anyway, but it was even more obvious just because of whether he didn't see the ball right away or it just kind of got away from him. Just an odd moment. But to not harp too much on Ronald's defense, I do think his future is in center field. Now, whether or not the Braves are going to make that happen this winter, we'll see. It's one of the big questions, at least for me, moving forward. But, it's too hard to get too down on Ronnie because he was basically the entire team at times for the last 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I'm not trying to kill him, to be sure. He's very good at baseball. Two threats that the Braves had early in this game. First inning, Freeman hits a single with two outs. Markakis has a five-pitch walk, and then Camargo on the first pitch pops up, and then the exact same thing happened in the third inning where Freeman walked and after an Ozzie single, and then Markakis had a first pitch pop up. So twice within a three-inning span, the Braves had two guys on, two outs, and right after a walk, and the guy swung the first pitch and popped it up. It was probably a good metaphor for the series, honestly. Just no discipline at all for the most part at the plate and a lot of pop-ups, and that was kind of perfect in some ways.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, watching the game, obviously not knowing at the time what the final result was going to be, you just kind of kept saying to yourself, this is going to come back to bite them, that you can't give up this many opportunities, and ultimately it did.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that easy to second guess everything. I'm sure it actually is easy to second guess. It shouldn't be as easy as we make it, which is something that I want to keep in mind as we talk here. But just all those first pitch. I know the Braves did a really good job this season jumping on first pitches, and that was one of the strengths of the team, just being aggressive. It came back to bite them in the entire series, but especially a couple times in this game, just some really ill-advised swings at pitches that shouldn't have been swung at in situations, and just a lot of did it feel? I mean, maybe it's just me, but I know it's anecdotal, but were there just a lot of pop-ups in the series in general?
It seems like it, at least from the Braves, and I think that might be a product of. And I can't remember who, but the Dodgers threw elevated fastballs more than almost anybody this year. So I'm guessing it was just a matter of the Braves not being able to get on top of them and hence popping them up.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was situational. Maybe it was targeted by them. That's something that, you know, credit to them if that was part of the game plan. But just a lot of pop-ups. The fourth inning was where we mentioned before briefly that the Braves actually did score their only two runs in this game and took the lead. Camargo and Flowers both walked to lead off the inning. They had Inciarte bunt, and that was something I wanted to ask you about. I had that bolded in my notes. Doesn't seem as consequential now that they lost by four runs, but what'd you make of the bunt decision? It was lefty on lefty. Inciarte struggles a lot against left-handed pitching. Traditionally, he was actually pretty good late in the season against lefties, but you know, career-wise, he's not a good hitter against left-handed pitching. But what did you make of him bunting there, and then what happened after that? You know, it led to Suzuki having the big hit of the night with a two-run single. But what was the bunt decision in your mind?
I'm generally team don't bunt, as I think a lot of our writers are on the staff. But in that situation, I didn't hate it, especially when you're down by one. And as you said, it was lefty on lefty. Ender's been a little bit better, but still hasn't been great. I mean, if Freddie Freeman goes up there and bunts, absolutely, you lose your mind. But
burn the place down.
Or if Acuna or even Ozzie, just the way he hits lefties. But in that situation, I didn't hate it. And it did pay off in a sense. I mean, who knows what happens if he swings away. Maybe he grounds into a double play. It moved the runners over and obviously set up Kurt Suzuki in a pinch hitting spot. So, yeah, at the time I didn't hate it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like it. I didn't, and I tweeted that it's something that I would not have done. I would not have had enter it. And that kind of says it all, honestly, in that I don't have a lot of faith in Enciarte against a left-handed pitcher, especially one that's a good one in Rich Hill. But I still, you know, math-wise, it's not probably the right move to bunt there. I do understand it, though, and I don't want to absolutely kill Snicker for it. I would not have done that. But, you know, I guess it quote-unquote worked. I don't really agree with that kind of line of thinking in general. But Suzuki did a thing, you know, Culberson. I was surprised they pitched to Culberson in some ways, you know, with a base open and the pitcher spot next. I'm sure they knew that it was going to be a pinch hitter, so maybe they were just choosing Culberson over Suzuki, which is probably the right move, frankly, because Culberson, you know, for all of his heroics this year, if you take a step back and realize it's still Charlie Culberson, and, you know, track record-wise, he's not the greatest hitter in the world. So, and they know him well, obviously, the Dodgers. He was there before. I'm sure they weren't exactly afraid of Culberson. They got the ground out there, but then Suzuki pinch hits and rocks a single to score two runs, and the place is going crazy, and that was a lot of fun for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was, and I know the announcers commented for a while there. I mean, the place was just electric, and you start to think, okay, maybe they are going to force game five, and then all of a sudden the wheels kind of fell off.
Yeah, there was optimism there, including by me, which is a rare thing. You know, the fifth inning, Johnny Venters comes in, which I don't love Venters as like a full inning reliever in this spot, but it worked out in the first in his first inning in the fifth. Got a strikeout, did walk Justin Turner, which is probably a good result, honestly, because Turner just murders left-handed pitching, and Johnny's pretty bad against righties, so that actually worked out very well. He got out of the inning. And then I would say the biggest thing, other than the Suzuki play offensively in this game, was the fifth inning and the Braves loading the bases and not scoring. In retrospect, that was a big, big thing. It felt big in the moment, and I think we all said that, even though the Braves were still winning. But especially now that we know the end result of a 4-1 loss, not scoring in the fifth inning was probably the biggest thing of the game, honestly, offensively. Freeman singles, Markakis walks. Camargo honestly probably should have hit into a double play, but it was booted by Machado to load the bases. And then, you know, nothing went well. Tyler Flowers swings at ball three, I would say. A pretty bad pitch pops up. And then Enciarte pops up again. By the way, going back to pop-ups, back-to-back pop-ups there in a really bad spot. And through five innings, they left eight on base, but those three were just crushing. And I had that killer. Huge in the notes. Like, it felt awful.
Yeah, I think at the time I tweeted, it might be the season here if you don't come through. And as you said, it wasn't even a line drive and in a warning track flyout where it's like, they just missed it, but the approach was good and it was just a little unlucky. I mean, you're right. I mean, Flowers swung at a ball that almost hit him, and then Ender just weakly popped one up to the shortstop, and it wasn't even a fly ball there from Flowers ties the game at that point.
The Braves were winning. It was still 2-1.
That's right. So it would have been 3-1. So you just talk about, and again, you just go back and, at the time, it was painful. Now it's even more painful. You think, what if somebody can put a ball in the gap there? You see what happens. But yeah, that was pretty crushing.
Well, I think, you know, if you watch enough baseball games and you know a playoff spot, and I think we all knew that two runs wasn't going to be enough. Like, you know, 2-1. I know you're winning, but you know, you go into the fifth there, and it's like, you know, at some point the Braves are going to have to score some more runs. And that was – it felt like it was going to be the biggest spot to do that. It ended up being the case, loading the bases with less than two outs. You got to get one across there at a bare minimum. And, you know, Flowers – again, I was really sort of an advocate for Flowers throughout the series. People were critical of Snicker playing him against left-handed pitching, which I think is crazy. He's been incredible against lefties this season, and really for his entire career he's been very good at hitting lefties. So I was definitely cool with that. But the percentages just didn't work out in the series for Flowers. He wasn't very good offensively. And that was a bad moment. And the Ender, you know, two outs, like, you know, I'm not going to put it on Ender, honestly, at that spot. Flowers was the bigger problem, not Enciarte, but obviously an ill-timed pop-up there, too. And, you know, you leave the fifth inning still winning at 2-1, but they leave Johnny Venters in the game for a second inning, which I honestly hated. Yeah, I tweeted that people got bothered by it, and I said, look, I tweeted it before it happened, number one, and number two, it's not against Jonathan. It's not against Venters. Like, everybody loves Johnny Venters, but I don't want him facing right-hand pitching in the second inning of an appearance. And it wasn't his fault that the Braves, you know, gave up the runs that they did in the sixth. But the process there was not really good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, though, who knows just where exactly everybody was In terms of being fresh too.
It's a very important point, and one that I probably should have made going in, is that we just didn't know like who was available. Like, there were a couple guys we knew were available, like Brad Brock was clearly going to be available. Venters was available because he didn't pitch yesterday, but everybody else pitched yesterday.
Yeah.
We didn't know. That's a good point.
Well, and you talked about them winning. They won yesterday, and at one point they had thrown four straight rookies out of the bullpen. I mean, the fact that, as you said at the very beginning, the fact that they were able to get one of these games is pretty crazy. I think it was just a bad time for Venters to – I mean, he didn't even pitch that poorly, just a little bit of bad luck there. And obviously Brock didn't have it, and Sobotka really struggled and let the floodgates open in the next inning. He kind of had to – I made the point last night that Snit, at least early on in yesterday's game, hadn't pressed all the right buttons early in the game, and not that I was fully blaming Snit for the bullpen's inability to throw strikes and get people out. And a couple of people said, you know, he doesn't have any buttons to push. And I kind of agreed. I don't know where he was supposed to turn, because it wasn't like even Sobotka over the last month, he's probably been the best reliever on the team. And he, of course, was the one who let the floodgates open today. So it was rough, but you're right. I mean, in hindsight, yeah, matching up a little better probably would have been the way to go, but there just weren't a ton of good options.
There weren't, and that's a really good point. It's hard for me to look at a situation and knowing that I do understand that guys weren't fresh, but going with Venters, who you don't want throwing multiple innings in general, that's a guy with a rebuilt arm, and you have him going out for a second inning against right-handed pitching. It just doesn't make any sense, honestly, to me. But I understand some of the dynamics in play. Anyway, it wasn't really his fault, but the way that it went down was very challenging. Grandal flies out. Hernandez singles on the ground through the left side, and Bellinger gets a force out. Looks like the Braves are in great shape with two outs. Then Puig pops up to right, and neither Markakis nor Albies can get to the ball. That ball falls in, and we all start looking at each other like, uh-oh, this is big trouble when that ball falls in. And then from there, pitching change, Brad Brock comes in, long battle with David Freese, two-run single, and then I guess in hindsight that was the end of the game, frankly.
Yeah, it was – the Puig hit had a 3% chance of being a hit, which is
– Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, and I think it was – Ozzie was up the middle a little bit, so he wasn't shifted over. I'm guessing Markakis was a few steps back for Puig, though I'm not
– Yeah, I mean, I wanted to say this. I wrote some stuff down on this because I, you know, mostly was – leaning into it and kind of being funny. I sent a tweet out about how we were going to be at hour five of the Talking Chop podcast talking about that play and the previous inning with the bases loaded situation. So I was kind of kidding about it, but people got upset with me that I was blaming Markakis. You know, it looked like his lack of range was a problem there. That's probably the best way for me to say it diplomatically. That's something that we talked about, you know, endlessly on this podcast. He just doesn't have any range. He's very slow, and he makes the plays he's supposed to make. But it looked, I will say, to the naked eye, as if he should have gotten there. But if you look at some of the stuff, if you're trying to, I was trying to cobble together some replays and things like that, I think he was playing pretty deep. The Statcast data had him going a long way and had him like with like a 2% catch possibility on that ball. That strikes me as incredibly low, frankly. I don't really believe that, to be honest with you. Maybe that's just me being stubborn. But maybe that factors in the fact that he's not fast and doesn't really cover ground well. But it didn't seem like he was, you know, going 100 miles an hour either, which is, you know, that's definitely anecdotal, so we should at least put that out. And then Albies had a shorter run according to Statcast data, which is obviously more accurate than what we have. He had a shorter run to the ball, so maybe it was actually on Albies, even though it looked like it was Markakis's fault. Probably Albies had less ground to cover, and he of course is a lot faster than Markakis. So between the two of them, it could have been nobody's fault. It could have just been perfect positioning and a really, really lucky thing for the Dodgers to have happen. Regardless, it's just frustrating, which I'm sure I probably could handle that better in the moment. But those two guys not making that play is huge. I mean, it didn't have to be. If Brad Brock comes in and gets an out, then it doesn't have to matter. But Brad Brock lost the battle against David Freese. Granted, that was a ground ball that is an out a lot of the time. Charlie Culberson, who's playing shortstop because Dansby Swanson's hurt, couldn't get to the ball. He did not get a great jump on that ball. Culberson's not a great defender at shortstop. I immediately tweeted that it was that Dansby makes that play. I firmly believe that. At the same time, it wasn't an easy play. It wasn't like Culberson made an error. So it was kind of that just perfect storm of events where the Braves needed some breaks to win the series, and they didn't get any breaks in that spot. So, I mean, I don't want to blame anybody, honestly. It was just kind of that perfect storm of an unlucky bloop, and then Culberson just asked to do something that he probably isn't capable of doing.
Yeah, and as you said, Freeze hit the ball pretty hard. And
he did.
You think back about the season as a whole for a ball that had a 3% chance of being hit from Puig, just kind of knocked it up in the air and found great. And then, of course, with the hit from Freeze, it was a 3-2 count. And it was a fastball belt high, kind of center of the plate. I know a couple people said, well, you could have just thrown him junk and walked him and then brought in Freed to face the lefty who was up next. And of course, that's all hindsight. Who knows? Maybe if maybe
just
Freed
pitched to him there. I mean, come on. Like,
yeah.
Honestly, like, I'm all for hindsight. Like, I think we talk about that stuff all the time on the podcast. But yeah, Brad Brock fresh. He's on your roster. If you can't get David Freeze out, who might be their worst player, like, come on. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's a spot where I would certainly want the Brock versus Freeze matchup over a lot of different matchups that are available to the Braves in that spot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. And I don't think that Brock did a terrible job. Like, he got a ground ball. It was hit hard. But, I mean, maybe I did make a note that he probably should have thrown another off-speed pitch at some point. Like, he had a really nasty slider to get the second strike in that at bat. But Freeze won a battle. He's had some clutch moments in his career. But again, you know, percentage wise, you can't really do much better in the series than Brad Brock versus David Freeze. And you just lost that one.
Yep. It's frustrating, but it's a testament to the Dodgers' depth. I mean, the Braves were throwing Flaherty and Lane Adams as pinch hitters regularly throughout the series. And when you can bring a Freeze, Dozier, Puig, whoever, it's just a testament to the importance of having a good bench in the playoffs.
Yeah, this does not matter at all. But Lane Adams not appearing in this game is a little bit frustrating when you played Ryan Flaherty for an at bat. But alas, I guess other than that, I mean, there were brief moments of hope for the Braves. There was an Acuna in the bottom half of the sixth inning. Acuna barely missed at what would have been a game tying homer to left field. He really kind of got under it pretty violently, and still the ball went to the warning track. He hit that ball incredibly high in the air and just was a launch angle miss. That was frustrating, but you know, it's just one of those inches things where if he hits the ball a centimeter differently, it's probably tied and you know, more momentum going back in the Braves' way. But you know, moments later, you have the 3-run homer from Machado against Sabatka, and you know, by all rights, it was probably over there at 6-2. Sabatka looked good for a while. I mean, it was about a month where he was great, so I had no issue with him being in the game there. Single to Turner, walked to Muncy, and then Machado gets him, and that's it. Honestly, I mean, I don't know what you do differently there. You know, Sabatka
was the option.
He probably was the choice. Like, this, you know, it's always easy to have like a different approach, and I'm sure, you know, perfect world, maybe you do something else. I guess it's top of their order, but Sabatka had been good and he was on the roster for a reason, and Machado just beat him. So
yeah,
that's
he was the right decision. Yeah.
I was okay with it. And after that, Tehran comes in, which is a whole other thing. I don't want to even go down too deeply into the rabbit hole on Tehran and his usage on the roster, but the fact that he was basically a mop-up duty after being carried in this series on the roster was interesting in some ways. He pitched well, I will say.
Is that his final appearance in Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, that was the talking point. That's one of the things that I guess we could talk about for a second here because I don't want to spend too much time on it, but there was a real sense, and a lot of people just not like me and you, people that are like more plugged in were tweeting that as a possibility as well. Like people that, you know, beat writers and guys like that were at least mentioning it. And that's probably a good sign that they're at least going to consider trading Julio Tehran. You know, he's under contract, so they're not just going to send him away. But at the same time, if you look at the roster, they have these pieces. They have Folty, they have Newcomb, they have Gausman, and then they have all the young guys. There probably isn't a spot, honestly, if they want to go with Tukey and they want to go with if Mike Soroka's back and all that stuff. Like maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to keep him around because he is not like crazy overpaid and you kind of know what he is. He's a solid starter. And I think there's weirdly, Tehran's almost underrated right now in that, you know, he wasn't great this year, but for what he's paid, a lot of teams would love to have him as their fourth starter. You know what I mean? But it's also a situation where like his upside is very low at this point. So All that to say, it was just weird that he came in that spot. It might have been the right move because he was fresh. At least they had him on the roster.
He was the only fresh guy down there. Yeah.
And if you're Snicker, you're probably looking at him like, all right, if we got to just get to the end of the game here, you got to get, you know, 8 more outs to just finish the game. It might just, you know, throw Julio out there and have him get 8 outs. He pitched fine, but
yeah. Should we talk about the final 3 seconds of hope for the Braves season in the 8th inning?
Yeah, that was next on my list. I mean, Teheran throws a clean inning in the top half. Inciarte and Culberson both have two out singles in the eighth. And then Lucas Duda comes in and absolutely annihilates a pitch, a 3-1 pitch to right field. It wasn't that close. I mean, people were messaging me that were in the building trying to – they couldn't see it on replay just to see how actually close it was. It wasn't that close. It wasn't like it was like a foot from the foul pole. But off the bat, I thought it was going to be a 6-5 game. By the way, if that's a home run, the Braves are still heavy underdogs to win the baseball game. But there at least would have been a real, real hope if that ball is a home run. And it was very close to being one.
Yeah, it was clear. It kind of was like the Eric Kinski shot from, was it 2010? That just, yep. But of course it went, and you're right, it did go fairly foul. It was just hit so hard. And I think it was a matter of.
It was annihilated, looking, man.
it was off the plate almost even, you know, on the inside of half, on the inner half of the plate, if I could talk, inner half of the plate. I thought it was gone. It just missed it. And then of course he comes and hits a decently deep fly ball for the third out to
he
center field.
It. But yeah.
Yeah. It was and you mentioned a 3-1. I mean, it was 3-0. The crowd was going nuts. You have Acuna on deck, and you think, man, two-out rally, that's kind of been their calling card all year. Maybe they're going to do it one last time, make things interesting, and just miss the 3-run homer, which, as you said, they're still down 6-5 at that point, but then all bets are off for trying to score one run versus four runs in the final inning. But yeah, just kind of a crusher, and everyone thought it was out in the building, and just to miss it like that was a little bit of a deflator to basically end the season's chances right there.
Yeah, it would have been perfect, honestly. The script was kind of there for what would have been a very fitting Braves comeback, even to make it interesting. The Braves had so many comeback wins this year that looked like they were dead. And Lucas Duda, you know, newly acquired guy who comes off the bench and has his only plate appearance of the game, and it had all the makings for that brief moment. I think we all kind of had resigned to the fate when it was 6-2. Like, there were already postmortems being written, and I was thinking about what would we talk about on the podcast, et cetera. And then it was like, oh, do I have to pay attention again? Not that we weren't watching, but like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's that moment like, oh, this might get interesting again. I might have to like change what my thought process is. And then it wasn't.
It is cool. You mentioned kind of the last, it was really cool. The sellout crowd today giving the team a standing ovation as the Dodgers won and celebrated on the field. Cause they deserved it. I mean, this team really seemed like they gelled from day one and truly cared about each other. And obviously had a really nice year winning 90 games. So it was cool to see everybody stay and kind of do one last cheer. And a couple of the players talked in the post game about how much it meant to them and that they were appreciative and all that good stuff. So that was definitely a cool final moment of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And I tweeted that too. A lot of people did, like, hoping that was going to happen, and it did, which I was happy to see. It's one of those times when you wish it was a home, when you wish you had this like local broadcast that could have like kind of painted the picture a little bit better. Cause obviously this is the way they should do it. The national broadcast was focused on the Dodgers. They had just won. They were showing the celebration as they should. But you could definitely you can hear it. You know, there were videos in the building that were circulating on Twitter. There was a lot of stuff going on there, and it was good. It was just good to see the appreciation, because I know that's how you and I feel and our whole staff feels. Like, again, like we said at the beginning of this podcast, it could be frustrating in the moment. It was not a fun series necessarily. At the same time, the season was so good that you have to recognize that. Same, you know, manager, players, coaches, everybody. You know, I think after the game, Snicker's comments were spot on. Like, he did what you expect him to do as a guy who everybody loves in the clubhouse. You know, my thoughts on him are well documented in terms of his tactical decisions. But Snicker handled it the way you want to see your manager handle it. Come out, praise your team for the work they did all season long. You know, express the frustration with the series, but at the same time also the optimism of the future and all that fun stuff. So he did a nice job with that, and you know, that's kind of the way it is. I don't want to, you know, get too nostalgic, I guess, because that's just not really my brand, but it was so much fun. I mean, we've been doing this podcast now for, you know, three seasons. There was not a lot of hope, at least in the Major League Club, for the first 2 years of this podcast. And this year, I mean, we talked about it a lot, but you and I and Eric and others, we all were in that 75 to 80 win range before the season. They came out and won 90, won the division comfortably, and, you know, won a playoff game. So you can't really ask for too much more than that.
No, you can't. I mean, it's, as we said, and I was actually kind of cool. Like, after the game, I wasn't heartbroken, and I didn't get the sense a lot of people were. Like, it wasn't like they were up 3-0 in the World Series and blew it, right? Like, it's not necessarily a series that I'm going to look back on, or at least I don't think I will look back on in 3 years and go, you know, God, that sucked. That was just miserable. You think about like the Giants series in 2010, I think every game was one run. Those are the ones where you just think, gosh, if just one ball bounces right, or if they do this.
I'm still mad about it right now.
Yeah. I mean, it stinks. It does. And of course, the David Carpenter, you know, that's the 2013 NLDS against the Dodgers. I mean, those are the series that really hurt. And again, I mean, it sucks. I mean, there won't be another Braves game for 6 months. And you played obviously to win the World Series. But I'm not overly bummed or frustrated or angry, which isn't always the case when your team loses in the playoffs. So a fun year and proud of the way they battled all year. And it's, as we said, hopefully this is just the start of things to come. And I know a couple people have compared this year to what the Cubs did in 2015 or 16, whatever it was, the year before they won the World Series. I'm not necessarily sure this team is going to win the World Series next year, but you do hope that it's kind of a launching point for what's, you know, a really great next 3 to 5 years.
As an Atlanta sports fan, I've had plenty of heartbreak in my life, and this series was not really anywhere near the list of that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there were moments where it was frustrating, to be sure. But I would definitely echo your sentiments of like, this is not on the list of painful moments in the playoffs, mostly because it was house money. I mean, I think if you, in the moment, even if you were frustrated, you still had to think like, you know, everything was kind of house money in this series. They came in as the underdogs. It wasn't like the Braves were supposed to win the series. Everyone picked the Dodgers as they should have, because that was the right side. But it wasn't like the Braves were this massive favorite that took a 2-0 lead in the series and lost. You know, they stole a game. We had a lot of fun last night. Like, that was a game I'm glad that happened. Like, getting swept would have been a little bit worse. Even then, as you said before, getting swept would have been fine. Like, it is what it is. It would have been frustrating in the moment. But getting the win there was fun. The way that it happened with Acuna hitting a grand slam and Freddie hitting the game-winning home run, like, that's fun. Those are your core guys. And that sort of added a little cherry on top of this thing. The loss loss. But you know, it was still a heck of a ride, and I think we're probably rambling, but at the same time, like, it's worth it, because that's just kind of the emotions that you're left with now. Like, I wasn't deeply broken up by this loss. Like, at the end of this thing, I just sent you a text, and I'm like, all right, podcast pretty soon. It was a situation where we weren't crushed. And in a different way, like, you know, next year, with expectations, and maybe this team wins 95 games and makes the run to the National League East title again and is a favorite, and if they lose like in some brutal fashion, that will hurt more than this did. There's no way around that. But for now, like, everything's pretty good still.
Yeah, you'd like to think this is the window opening and not closing. It's not like Acuna and Freeman and Fulte are all free agents to be, and this was your one chance. You know, I know some folks with the Indians today, as they were eliminated, now that their window is closing, because they have some really good players under contract, but they are going to lose some core pieces that took them to the World Series a few years ago. And it's, as we've said, we hope it's, I can't recall who the analyst was, but they said before the series, there's a chance this is the worst team the Braves have over the next 5 years. And I would certainly hope so, because that would be a lot of fun. But all good. It was a fun year, and you certainly would have liked to have seen them stun the Dodgers and beat what's basically been the best team on paper all year long. But alas, sometimes you can't win them all.
There is a chance of that. And I would caution against people getting too satisfied to the point where, like, you're expecting this team to be great for the next little while. I do think the pieces are in place for a very, very nice run here for this Braves team. But there have been plenty of fan bases that have been teased with 1 year, and they think it's going to be great for a while, and then it's not. So don't take it for granted. Like, really enjoy this season. It was awesome, and reflect on it as such. I do think if I was to predict looking forward, the Braves would be good again for a while here. But it's not a given, and ask around. You know, these 1 year samples do happen, and as a result of that, you got to be really thankful of the ride that this team took us on, because it was fun. I mean, for the first time in a few years, the major league team was legitimately fun from start to finish. And you know, in baseball, that's kind of half the battle. Obviously, you want to win, but this is more than any other sport. Every single day for 6 months, you're just grinding with your team. And if it's not fun, it's really a slog. You know, this podcast, writing about baseball, it's not fun if the team's not fun. And this team was really fun the entire season.
Yeah. I mean, you know well, but people who aren't a part of the editorial process with Chris and Eric and everyone on the site, I mean, trying to figure out what your weekly article is going to be when the team is 30 games below 500 in August is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Absolutely. This was an easy one and a fun one, and the podcast was fun to do. So I really appreciate you coming on as much as you do. I've said the same thing to Eric, but you guys helped me quite a bit. You are by far the most frequent guests, and you don't have to do it. So I really appreciate you spending so much time with me, Eric. And Eric. Sorry, Scott. But yeah, one of those things where you don't have to do it. So I really appreciate you coming on as much as you have. So thank you, sir.
Absolutely, buddy. Glad to be on.
Do you have any other parting thoughts before we get out of here? I think we've probably expressed ourselves for the most part, but oh my gosh, 45 minutes. I had no idea we talked that long. So there you go.
Yeah, time flies, I guess. Yeah, it'll be cool. I mean, the fact that it's already getting close to the AL and NLCS is fun, and you give it another 3 weeks, and we'll kind of be in the start of the off season. If you want to get excited even more about the future, you go look at KotsBaseballContracts.com and look and remind yourself of all the money the Braves will hopefully spend well this winter. And obviously people who check out the site know of all the prospects that are about to arrive. And so, yeah, it's cool. I mean, it sucks that the Braves are out. It really does. You won't see another baseball game for 6 months or so, but lots of good things on the horizon, hopefully, and it should be a fun offseason.
Absolutely, and I promise we will talk about all of it in the near future. For now, the plan will be kind of back to our regular schedule on Sundays. I know this is kind of a nice flurry of activity. I have not done a ton of daily baseball podcasts, so it was fun to kind of pop in and pop out and talk about just game stuff and get really in the nitty-gritty. We'll be sort of zooming back out to big picture stuff. And as the offseason arrives, there'll be a week or two when we're not here. But for the most part, every Sunday or at least every weekend somewhere, usually on Sundays, we'll be recording, and we'll be here for all of that. So please join us. Please subscribe to the show. Also, every single show is obviously on talkychop.com with a little bit of a listening guide that I write up about every single podcast. So please keep joining us. Thank you, Scott, once again for all that you've done, my friend. And for now, I guess this is the end of the 2018 season. We'll do like definitely some more big picture stuff in the future. But and we really enjoyed it. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.